Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'd like to thank John for that execrable introduction. I'm used to crappy introductions. I always have. In fact, John, I don't think you people realize his real name is Jim. We've been calling him John ever since he started this proponent. You know, so from now on, we're going to be calling him John, but that's a little secret. It's tough being the ambassador of crap, you know? People tell me my reputation precedes me. The only problem is I have to watch I don't step in it, you know? My brother is here from Ukiah. He's a college professor up there. Dan, can you raise your hand? He's over there. He's speaking of proponents. He's a proponent of biogas, and he volunteered to come and do sound effects. So if you see him sit down, you might want to clear some space, give him lots of room. I told my brother, I said, I'm the head shit around here. So he's been calling me shithead ever since. So I got to get even with him somehow. We're here, speaking of shit, that's what we're here to talk about. I call it human ore because it's a little more palatable, especially in, you know, most circles. And just to give you a brief background, I've been working with human ore for about 33 years. And in the last few years, I've been getting involved in it on a larger scale because it works very nicely on a small scale, and a lot of people have been after me to try to expand the system so it can be used on a larger scale. I'm just curious, how many of you heard the little short radio interview we had today? Okay, got a couple. There's a few. I'm also curious, are you all, I mean, like from the neighborhood here, or who came a long distance besides me? I came from Pennsylvania. Pardon? Where are you from?
Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz. Okay.
Go Sluck.
That's in California?
Yeah.
Berkeley. Okay. Berkeley, great. Is that pretty far? Anybody else? Everybody else pretty local? How many of you have compost piles? Oh, wow. It's my kind of people here. What about compost toilets? Nice. Wow. Now, the first time I came to Northern California was probably 10 years ago. My brother lives in Ukiah. He's been here 30 years, so it took me that long to come out to visit him. But I remember my daughter lived in Berkeley, actually, until August. But I flew out here. Flew into Berkeley, or flew into San Francisco, got a rental car and drove up to Ukiah. And that's my brother. Those are the first sound effects of the evening. Those weren't the ones I was expecting, but he can surprise you. First time I came out here, the feeling I had of Northern California was that I have arrived home. Maybe that's the same with a lot of you. I live in Pennsylvania, northwestern Pennsylvania. It's like the gun nut, right-wing, religious fanatic center of the world. And I come out here, you can't even get a good loaf of bread there, you know. I come out here, everything's organic, and, you know, I just felt like I made it. I found, until I looked at the price tag of everything. Then I went back home. The place I have back in Pennsylvania, if you could lift it up and move it over here, it'd be worth $20 million, but there it's not. But it works for me. Anyway, we're going to go through this presentation, and I'm going to explain all this, and we're going to then open it up for questions and answers, and there's plenty of food. I don't know where the beer is. I haven't seen it yet, but maybe it'll show up later, and we'll have like a little, just pretend like you're sitting in somebody's living room here and have a little chat. Get started. I'd like to start these, you know, last year, 2008, was the International Year of Sanitation. Yeah, nobody even knows about it. I gave some presentations around the country. One was in Manhattan, Lower East Side. One was in Texas, and I think I was the only person in the United States talking about global sanitation. I honestly do. But it was the International Year of Sanitation, 2008. This is one of the reasons why. 2.6 billion people don't have proper toilet facilities. What does that mean? That means they don't use a toilet. That's almost half of the planet, half the population. They'll go outside and, you know, crap on the ground. Unsafe drinking water, 1.5 million kids a year die from diarrhea. It's just going to get worse if it continues. These are the basic, I'm trying to stand in the right place so I don't get feedback, but these are the basic, some of the basic statistics. The United States produces enough sewage to fill the Great Lakes every 4 months. Hard to believe, but according to the Natural Resources Defense Council, that's the fact. That's a lot of water that we're crapping in and flushing away. And it goes, you know, anything that's thrown away or flushed away doesn't go away. It just goes someplace else. Here's California, 5,175 beach closings and health advisory days in 2005, and a 25% increase from 2004. You probably, I suppose, you folks live in California, especially on the coast, hear about the beach closings, the beach advisories from elevated bacteria. Maybe you don't. I don't have more recent statistics, but this happens to be a fact. The water at California beaches can cause these diseases, gastroenteritis, dysentery, hepatitis, etc. And in fact, well, the EPA states that the pollution comes from sewage overflows, sewer overflows, septic systems. Basically, a byproduct, a lot of the pollution is a byproduct of our practice of defecating in water. And when you think about it, you know, we all grew up with this. This water defecation practice has gone on since late 1800s. So we grew up with it. Our parents grew up with it. Our grandparents grew up with it, more or less. And we take it for granted. But when you think about it, what land animal has to go find water in order to defecate? Imagine if every dog had to go find a creek or something to crap in, or every horse, or every elephant. We are the only ones. We think we're fish, because fish are the only, you know, it's normal for fish to crap in water. But we do it too, and we think it's normal. UCLA, 1.5 million people get sick each year just from swimming off the coast of Los Angeles in Orange County. Pollution threatens the sea life as well. I don't know what that creaking noise is. These are statistics. Anybody can look it up and find it. You can do a Google search. It pops right up. But I doubt that most people are aware of these things or even talk about them, especially people along the coast. I don't think you even want to think about them. By the way, when I was looking this stuff up, it said that the bacteria that cause these diseases are found within the first 30 feet of the shoreline. So the farther you get out, the less there is. So just think about that the next time you're wading in the beach. Okay, and then the sewer, you know, this whole idea of using water for waste is a bad idea. The Swedish International Development Center agency says they're very expensive, they pollute. We all know this already. Use a lot of water that we could be using for drinking. And by crapping and defecating into water, the nutrients that would go back into the soil go out and create pollution instead. UN Environment Program, nobody planning these sewers is thinking about the pollution. They're just thinking about how to get rid of the waste. What do you do with it? How do we get rid of it? How do we make pumps and pipes big enough and fast enough to move the material, the waste, from one place to another? Then what do we do with the waste when we get it there? And how do we, you know, try to remediate it? It's a big environmental engineering dilemma. Then here we have the humidor toilet. And the humidor toilet, I call it a humidor toilet versus, say, a compost toilet versus some people call them sawdust toilets. The humidor toilet is the correct term. When I wrote this book when I was in grad school as a graduate thesis, and I didn't turn it in as a graduate thesis. I got tired of writing in academic language. You can't say turd in a thesis. And you can't write about this without at least saying turd once. You know? I ended up with characters in the book, you know, Mr. Turdly, and then there's... I got turds that... you know, kind of dance around, and I mean, you know, I knew if I published this as a thesis in academic convention, nobody would ever read it. It'd be the most boring thing in the world. But if I converted it into public, popular language, threw a few turds in there, a couple of aliens, people would actually read it. So, in fact, that's what happened. It was a wild gamble on my part, but it turned out that the book had developed some popularity, and it has been translated in a few languages, published in a few continents, circulated around the world, and the term humidor has become internationally accepted as the word for human excrement recycled via composting. We'll get into what that means here in a second. Simple concept. We eat. What goes in one end comes out the other. One organism's waste, or one organism's excretions, are another organism's food. So, and that happens to be a law of nature. That's why there is no waste in nature. You know, when leaves fall off of trees, it's not waste. It's leaves. And when they hit the ground, they break down and they're consumed and recycled, and there's nothing wasted in the natural system. What we needed to do was figure out what would eat our excrement besides the neighbor's dog, you know. In Mexico, that's why they have dogs running all over the place. That's the sanitation system. I was down there in Mexico in 1977. If you went out in the morning, and of course there's no toilets, you have to go out in a sand dune or something, and while you're doing your thing, there'd be a dog sitting there watching you, patiently waiting, you know, looking at his wristwatch. And as soon as you got your pants up, that dog had his face in that, hogging that hot meal down, you know? It's like a hot breakfast. But so anyway, a little too graphic for you. Anyway, the benefits of composting, the crux of the human or toilet is that the human excrement is thermophilically composted or composted in a system that produces heat. And the human excrement is simply a feedstock in that compost stream. It's a feedstock. In the end, there are lots of other feedstocks. There has to be, or it won't make compost. Human excrement will not compost unless it is mixed with other materials, particularly carbon-based. When you have to balance the carbon and nitrogen, this is what my book gets into. By the way, I'm not here to sell anything. My book is available free on the internet. If you don't have money, it's been free since about 2000. All three editions are free on the internet. You can download them. You can read them online. So all the information is available to anybody anywhere in the world who can get online and look at it. This chart on the right, which is probably hard to read from where you're at, but it shows the pathogen death rates or the pathogen thermal death points. In other words, the what temperatures disease organisms are killed at in a composting system. One of the most persistent fecal parasites or pathogens is the roundworm. It's called Ascaris. The eggs are microscopic. The worms will produce thousands of them. They come out through your stool. They require a period of time in the soil. So if you go out and crap in the soil like humans have done for a million years, we actually had these parasites co-evolve with us because of our practice of defecating in soil. As long as we defecate in soil, these parasites continue to thrive. This summer I attended the World Dry Toilet Conference in Finland. I presented a paper on humanoid sanitation. And there was a fellow from Nigeria presenting a paper. And they, I have this up on my website. They tested in Nigeria, they tested soil, stools, fecal material, and fruits and vegetables for parasites. And they found most of the stools, a large percentage of people's excrement had, they were tested for three types of worms. I think it was whipworm, roundworm, and something else, I don't remember. Hookworm, I think. A lot of the stool samples were tested positive. A lot of the soil samples tested positive for parasite eggs. And a lot of the fruits and vegetables, even pineapples. Pineapples was one of the highest. So if you go to Nigeria, you don't want to be eating raw fruits and vegetables, or else then you end up with these parasites. Well, it just so happens, in the roundworm egg can live. They've shown a viability of like up to 7 years in soil. So there are three rules of Jenkins's three rules of human sanitation. Human excrement should never come in contact with soil. And this is why, because of the potential for parasites. Human excrement should never come in contact with water, because it pollutes the water. And rule number three, wash your hands after going to the bathroom. That's it. If those three rules were followed, the world would be much cleaner and the human species would be much healthier. Now, if you look at these thermal death points, the Ascaris, which is in the bottom, the top pathogen, that's the roundworm that can live for 7 years in the soil. In a compost environment, that's, what does that say, 60 degrees or 55 degrees centigrade, they die in an hour. 1 hour. 55 degrees centigrade is about 125, 130 degrees Fahrenheit. So if we collect human excrement, subject it to a thermophilic composting environment, the pathogens that may be in there are eliminated. This is the true essence of sanitation. And this is the crux of the humanoid system. It is a thermophilic composting system. The composting, the toilet material that's collected must be subjected to this sanitation. If it isn't, it's not a humanoid system. And then all the rest of the pathogens listed, they all have the same similar thermal death points. Some die faster, some take a little longer. What the EPA requires is 130, in California, 131 degrees Fahrenheit for 3 days. The last large-scale humanoid compost pile we built here, down in Fresno, was above 135 for 4 months, and after 4 months, we just stopped measuring it. It's 3 days is the requirement. We had temperatures above 100, consistently, steadily above 135 degrees for over 4 months, and all we did was pile it up. That's all we did. No turning, no digging, no electricity, didn't add anything, just collected it and piled it up. And I'll explain that a little bit better here in a minute. And I'm just kind of trying to pound in that thermophilic issue because that is the foundation of the humanoid sanitation system. It says California compost regulations require organic material to be 135. It's 131. And we collected the humanoid from 500 people over a 10-day period at a music festival and piled it up. It was 135 degrees for 4 months, and after that we just, it might have been 135 degrees for 6 months, we don't know, but it only had to be that way for 3 days. In fact, for the first 7 weeks, it was 155 average. So it's actually quite easy to achieve the thermophilic response. It's very simple. Now this is kind of an older picture. This is of my house. This is humanoid compost. I've composted all of our families and visitors and business associates and office workers humanoid at my location for this particular location for 30 straight years. And all of the compost has gone into our kitchen garden, which is right beside the house. All of that compost was used to grow food for our family, and it still is today. And I raised six kids on this food, six very healthy kids. So people think compost toilet means using human excrement to grow food. It isn't. It's using human excrement to make compost, and then compost to grow food. And the difference between human excrement and compost is 100%. You know, to give you an example, if I gave you a piece of apple pie on a plate and you ate it, after you ate it, what comes out the other end? Does that look like a piece of apple pie? Is there any resemblance? If there is, I'm never eating pie at your house. I can guarantee you that. Well, when you feed human excrement to microorganisms, it's the same type of thing. They digest it goes through, comes out through their metabolic system. When what you end up with is entirely different. What you end up with is a pathogen-free, friendly, pleasant-smelling, valuable material. You're simply recycling a resource using microorganisms. The thermophilic organisms are kind of interesting because they theoretically have been around since the beginning of the Earth, which is why they produce that heat. That's how they originally came into being. They came into being during the time when the Earth was hot, and billions of years ago, theoretically, that some call them the common ancestor of all living things. And the hard part to understand is that they are everywhere. They're in your excrement already. They're in organic material. They're in leaves. They're in grass. They're in garbage. And if you pile that stuff up, they proliferate and produce that heat. They produce that primordial environment, that hot environment. If you don't pile that stuff up, they don't produce the heat. It's just an uncanny phenomenon of nature. This is the humidor toilet. This is the basic, most fundamental type, which we have some here on display. And that's actually a toilet in use. What you're looking at in there is human excrement covered with a cover material. That cover material is a carbon-based material that happens to be a sawdust, a rotted sawdust. This is why it's black. The important thing to understand about a humidor toilet system, there's no separation of urine. There's no separation of paper. It all goes into the toilet. You should never, never separate the urine. And that toilet right there, which is in use, has no odor coming from it. You could be standing right there with the lid open like that. You could take that container out, set it on the kitchen table while you're eating dinner, and you will not smell a toilet. And it's a fact. If you smell anything, it's because you don't have enough cover material. So you add cover material, appropriate cover material, and you have a totally odor-free system. So a small little toilet, the reason this is like the smallest, simplest type of humidor toilet is because the receptacle is a 5 gallon or 20 liter volume, and that's the size that a person can carry. So this type of toilet can be used anywhere, whether you can get a road in, a truck in, a car, it could be on the 10th floor of a building, it can be in your house, in your bedroom, in your office, and nobody would know, nobody would smell anything. When the receptacles are full, you put a lid on them, set them out somewhere, and the contents get composted. As I said, you don't separate the urine, you don't separate the paper, you don't separate anything. You use it just like a flush toilet, except you don't flush, instead you cover with a cover material. That cover material prevents the odor and prepares the material for composting. No electricity is needed, no water. So any place that you can have access to a carbon-based cover material, you can have a sanitation system, whether you have water or electricity. All you need is a receptacle and a carbon-based material. You know, the worst-case scenario is you go out and rake up a bunch of leaves and forest litter and use it for cover material, even pine needles. You have to have the cover material. The toilet material has to be collected and compost it, and you have to have a place to make the compost. Those are the basic requirements. Now here's a collection of photos. People send me pictures of their toilets from all over the world. I call myself the universal shit magnet. Anything related to shit in the universe comes to me and sticks. Email, phone calls, faxes, you know, every story and joke and picture ends up in my doorstep. Some of them are worth sharing, and these are some of the more creative humidor toilets people build. Some of them are quite nice, some of them are very simple. That red one on the left there, I think that's in France, actually, recently built. The one on the top left, I believe that was sent to me by an MD, a medical doctor in Pittsburgh. And I'm not sure where all the other ones are. I can't keep track of them. Now, this is in Finland, and this is an example of a a humanoid toilet that would be like a portable toilet. You could put it anywhere. You could put it at a festival. Humanoid toilets, if you're going to use them in your home, ideally they're in, you put them inside where they're comfortable. But if you have to have a toilet that's used for a gathering or something, then you can build a little unit like this, and then the receptacle can be a larger size. So you can't see the back of this, but behind there, there's a receptacle that's removable when it's full. And the same deal, you throw the sawdust on it or whatever you're using for cover material, and you don't have any odor. This is in Australia. What you're looking at is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 doors going into toilets at a music festival. And this is one of the advantages of these toilets versus, say, plastic chemical toilets, is they're creative, they're attractive. The people like them. You go inside, there might be some flowers, there might be artwork on the inside. And they make no pollution and no waste. If you can imagine a toilet that doesn't produce waste. If you look inside there, that little toilet seat in the back has a chute in it. The toilet material goes into a receptacle. There's a container there for the carbon-based additive, and that gets thrown in after you use the toilet. They're actually very simple. Most of these have instructions, posters inside that show exactly what you do and explain why you're doing it. So people can use these toilets and feel good about taking a crap. You know, it's all getting recycled and there's no waste being produced. This is in France, similar deal. These are toilets, humanoid toilets. And by the way, these all come apart and flatten out and get trucked away after the event. And then they bring them back in on a trailer, set them up, bolt them back together, and you've got an instant portable toilet. Same principle, though. This is the back side. This is a drum. The drum collects the toilet material. It's a little drum. It's sitting on a pallet. There's a little pallet truck there. When those are full, you simply move them out, put a lid on them, stick another one in, let them sit there, and when the event's over and everybody's gone, collect the toilet material and either compost it on site or take it to another site. So it's really a pretty simple system. These are toilets that use 5-gallon receptacles. This is in California. Behind those curtains are actual toilets, and we'll see a little bit of a video here about people who were using these. Behind that guy there who's walking, there's a white 5-gallon receptacle. That's a full toilet receptacle. When they were full, they would simply set them outside, and twice a day, a crew came along, collected them, and composted them. That's an example of one of the toilets on site. They're permanent. You can see the white receptacles in there, those are empties. So when the full one is taken out, it's set behind the building, and the empty one's put in place. And the instructions are on the wall. This was an experiment, see if it would work, and it worked beautifully. This is how it was composted there. Those straw bales, those are the walls of the compost bin. In the back, there's a wooden bin that was already there before I got there. But the straw bales made the primary compost bin. They started with one bale, filled it up, added another bale, filled it up, added another bale, and filled it up. And in the end, the walls were about 5 feet high. And that was all the toilet material and the food from 500 people over 10 days. And that's the it was simply collected and piled up. Anytime it's piled up or collected, it's always covered, always covered. So in the bin here, it was covered with straw. And this is the pile we monitored. When we monitored at 12 locations in the pile, two different depths, and averaged the temperature, and 4 months later, it was still over 135 degrees. It only had to be 131 for 3 days in California. So now, I think we might be getting a little video here. What happened at this festival that I just showed you with the big straw bale bin was I was not responsible for that. I heard that it was happening, and I went out there to see what they were doing, and I documented it and got the data that I wanted. But while I was there, I had my video camera, and I went around and I kind of lurked around these toilets, and people would come out. I would just say, you know, I'm doing a documentary on compost toilets. Can you tell me what your reaction to this toilet you just used? And they didn't know me from anybody. And what's your take on the humidor toilet? I mean, have you been using them here?
I became a huge fan last year. Oh yeah, just as soon as I had a chance, one time was enough. And I never ever stepped back into the porta potty again.
Well, but when I first heard the idea, I generalized it was going to smell and it would be gross. But I was pleasantly surprised with the sawdust. It completely masks the smell and hides it. I feel it's 10 times better than the Renta toilets that have their own smell. It's very strong, and I assume it's toxic chemicals in there. So I was really surprised.
I'm so happy that that invention has arisen, because it's completely changed the nature of the whole camp. Instead of having, by this time in the week, to steel yourself for a very unpleasant experience of chemicals and other unpleasant odors and flies swarming all over you.
Really?
In a hot and closed plastic space. Instead, you can have the experience of climbing up into a breezy, open, cool, pine-scented, kind of nice little cabinet, and it's completely pleasant. Yesterday, we were noticing, usually by this time in camp, there would be a gazillion flies all over the place, and there are almost no flies, and so it seems much more sanitary and certainly more aesthetic.
We think they're great. We think the compost toilets are just terrific.
You don't see things and you don't smell things.
The toilets are great.
They're really clean. They're always well equipped with all the supplies we need. And it's the best composting pit toilet I've ever used.
I like them more than the porta potties. The last year the porta potties are smelling way too bad.
They're fantastic. The air is great. They don't stink. They're wonderful. You can look at the sky.
The toilets are great. I can attest to that. They smell really good. I mean, you go in there and there's no odor whatsoever.
I ditto that. I think this is much more sanitary.
Yeah.
Definitely smell sweeter. Not have to have these big trucks coming by cleaning them out, picking out the potties. Yeah, definite improvement. Yeah, I had never seen this before. This is the first time. So.
It is so much nicer than the porta potties.
Yeah, I'm doing a documentary on compost toilets. So
okay.
I'm just catching people cold coming out and get a candid comment.
Really well put together. It's cool how they could build the outhouses for a whole festival of 300 or however many people we are here, and make it educate people about compost and waste, and it's really nice. It doesn't smell.
Have you used these toilets?
I have used them twice already.
Twice?
Yeah.
And what comments do you have to make?
They're probably the nicest outhouses I've ever been in my entire life.
Have anything you want to say?
It's a beautiful experience. I'm happy to be able to recontribute my waste to this earth. I lurk around compost toilets and I'm doing a documentary on them. I just ask people what their opinion was, or if they have any comments.
It works.
Any comments for improving them?
I haven't been around too many. That one seems to be pretty nice, though.
I think they're excellent. I think that they make a lot of sense, and I love the little signs in there.
Okay, so that gives you an idea. You know, I was surprised. I expected that maybe there'd be some complaints or, you know, the reactions were overwhelmingly positive. And these are these 5-gallon systems. So Phil, somehow this human or stuff has gained attention around the world. And by the way, that those people we just saw, that was from two different music festivals last year, one in California and one in Kentucky. This is another little video. Philip Cruz from Korea and the UK have visited my house. The Koreans came last November. The Humaner book was translated into Korean and published there, and somehow it must be doing pretty well. I just give the rights away. My book distributor thinks I'm crazy, and I probably am. Somebody's selling them in Korea, and it gained the attention of the Seoul Broadcasting System, and they sent a film crew over and filmed for 4 days at my house last November. And then the BBC came over, and they filmed in February. And of course, public TV's been up a couple times. And so what I think this next little segment shows some of those, some of that filming.
Suzuki 변기를 대신해 태비화 변기를 처음 만들어서 보급한 조셉 젠킨스를 만나기로 했다.
Off and open up.
그의 삶이 이렇게 바뀐 건 대학 시절 우연히 접한 동양의 자연 농법에 빠지면서부터다. 식량의 대량 생산과 화학 비료의 편리성에 밀려서 사라져버린 자연 농법. 아이러니하게도 근대 농업이 활성화된 미국에서 한 젊은 청년에 의해 되살아난 것이다. 퇴비를 뒤섞어주는 것은 발효되면서 생기는 열을 빼주기 위해서다. 여기에 짚을 적절히 이용해서 미생물이 잘 활동할 수 있게 온도를 맞춰주면 1년 후엔 양질의 자연 퇴비가 된다. 온도계를 다시 꽂고 나면 모든 일이 마무리된다. 이젠 기다리는 일만이 남았다. 자연이 똥을 퇴비로 변화시켜 줄 때까지 시간에 맡기기만 하면 된다.
As far as Korean culture is concerned, the use of human manure probably dates back thousands of years. And today, unfortunately, I think a lot of it is being abandoned. But if instead the Koreans understood the basic concepts of humanure, meaning adding a carbon material, have an aerobic system for degradation, cultivating microorganisms is all very simple because you've seen it here. Then they can advance. They can take what they've done for thousands of years, advance it into the 21st century, and produce soil fertility for their gardens and their farms without and eliminate the pathogen issues and the problems that they've had in the past.
2 years ago, we told you about a local man who designed a revolutionary way to deal with something most people don't even want to talk about, human waste. Well, since then, Joe Jenkins has been asked to implement his program in a country that is besieged with environmental problems. Tonight, On Cue contributor Doug Oster shows why Mongolia is welcoming Joe Jenkins with open arms as an environmental pioneer.
When I went to Mongolia, I had no idea what to expect. What I found was they were extremely receptive to the idea, to the point practically where I was practically mobbed one day by a group of women who just wanted to tell me how much they appreciated me being there.
Okay, I've been met by these ladies. They're trying to tell me something, and I don't understand the thing they're saying.
So how old is this pile here?
This is new. This is
like brand new.
Yeah,
we first told you about Jenkins and his work back in 2004. That's when we went to his home near Grove City, and he showed us how his humanure system works.
And we now know that microorganisms will convert our excrement into a safe, sanitary material that's valuable, useful for growing food. We didn't know that until relatively recently in human history.
So in order for the toilet to work correctly, you need...
Now, when you use a toilet, you're creating waste. In a humanure system, when you use a toilet, you're creating wealth. It's like putting money in the bank. Because everything is recycled, in the end you have the wealth of the compost which grows food. It's good for the community, for the environment, for health, and for long-term human survival.
That was Mongolia, that last one. And the interesting thing about the humanure system, which I find particularly satisfying, is a group of people can gather together today and not produce any sewage. Can gather together for days, weeks, months, indefinitely, as long as the conditions are available for the humanure sanitation process, no sewage would be produced. That's something that you don't hear said very often. Maybe you've never heard it said. Maybe nobody's ever even said it before. We can now say that. We can gather people together without producing sewage. Instead, you can produce soil fertility by using this humanure toilet. Let me see what else I have here. That's it. So at this point, this is just contact information. At this point, I kind of skimmed over this whole thing. Didn't get into anything in real depth, just trying to give you an overview. So we're going to open the floor to questions and answers. And now, I don't know if we have a mic to hand around, or do we? No, we don't. Okay, well, okay, we got one right there. It will not compost in a 5-gallon receptacle. You have to have a certain amount of mass. Composting is kind of, it's a little bit of an art. And I kind of like to use the analogy of bread making. You know what the ingredients are to make bread. It's flour, yeast, water, basically. Maybe throw a little salt in. If you put flour, yeast, and water into a bowl and stir it up, does that make bread? No, it doesn't. There's a process of letting it rise, kneading it, putting it in pans, baking it. Composting is a similar type of thing. There are nuances to it, and there's a education and experience that really helps in learning to make good compost. When I was in Mongolia, the people there were very receptive. They loved the idea. And I gave a presentation to a Mongolian community group. Of course, it's all interpreted, so it takes twice as long to give it. I have to say, can only say half as much. But when I was done, an old guy, traditional Mongolian man, raised his hand and he said, he was really excited, and he said, "Hey, why don't we have competitions to see who can make the best compost?" And these competitions can be between neighborhoods. Already he was right on the ball with the idea that the composting is something that somebody can make it better than somebody else. We can test this compost and see who has the best quality. And we can learn that. We can learn from each other how to improve it, the process. So, you know, you don't just have a 5-gallon container, put the ingredients in there, and expect it to thermophilically compost. There has to be a certain mass and certain conditions. Well, more than 5 gallons. It's not the answer isn't specific or certain. For example, there was some research done. There's a magazine called Compost Science and Utilization. It's a very academic magazine. It's a quarterly magazine, and I do some scientific advisory stuff for them. One of the research projects they did was taking these compost devices that you buy, these plastic things like garbage cans. They got a whole group of different brands, and they got a mix of organic material. They brought a big dump truck in and dumped this mix of manure and wood and sawdust and whatnot, food scraps, dumped it in a big pile. And then they filled each one of these containers. None of them heated up, but the pile did. The pile got cooked like crazy. Nothing in the container heated it up. Jesus Christ. Okay, right here. Everybody asked it. You guys must all be on antibiotics. there's a couple of answers to that. One is the only research that's been done. Well, first off, the thermophilic composting process eliminates or remediates a lot of complex chemical materials, and I get into that into my book. Composting is used to remediate contaminated soils contaminated with things like diesel fuel, with TNT. If you put these soils through the composting system, that stuff disappears. It starts out in the soil, but it's not in the compost. Now, as far as the research on pharmaceuticals goes, we aren't collecting and composting human manure on a large scale. That's what I'm trying to get us to get going, so we can do the research. Instead, the research done on pharmaceuticals has been with cattle, with livestock, because cattle are injected with antibiotics. So they do have antibiotic-contaminated manure that they can test, and it's showing that the composting process is eliminating them. So composting, I think, is the answer to getting rid of that, getting out of the environment. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to flush it. It's going to go in the water, and it will pass through the water system, still active.
Well, I noticed your
pardon?
Legality.
Oh, the legality issue. That's a good question, and it's not a real simple answer. First off, a humidor toilet is not a composting toilet. A composting toilet, by legal definition, is a toilet in which composting takes place. You know, you've heard of the Clevis Multrum, the Sunmar, the Biolet, all these toilets. They're supposedly composting inside the toilet. They don't really compost. It's a type of compost, but it's not thermophilic. And those toilets have to be National Sanitation Association approved. And by law, in most places, the material that comes out of them is considered septic or contaminated and should be dealt with by a septic hauler, because there is no thermophilic composting in those toilets. The humidor toilet is not a, by definition, composting toilet. It's part of a compost toilet system. The composting takes place in a bin or a composting operation, or if you're doing it yourself and you're in a backyard bin. And so what you fall into then is any regulations related to composting. So it's a whole gray area. I mean, What happened? Let me give you an example. 2 years ago, I have 143 acres, and it spans a township and a borough. And my business is in the borough. And I have two humidor toilets in my business. I've had that business set up now for 5 years. For 5 years, I've never produced any sewage at my place of business. I've only produced compost. Well, 2 years ago, I sued the borough, myself and four other people, because the borough issued a building permit to an asphalt plant, and it was illegal. And we caught them, and we sued them, and beat their asses in court. So they had a group of people in the borough who had a vendetta against me. So this year, they called the DEP, Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, and submitted an anonymous complaint that I was discharging toxic waste into the environment. And the DEP showed up in an unmarked car and inspected my property without me. I mean, I was there. They came in, inspected everything, and then they came into my office. Guy handed me his card. He says, "I'm the investigator for the DEP. We have an anonymous complaint. You've been discharging toxic materials." He says, "I just inspected the entire property. There was no toxic materials being discharged or disposed of anywhere that I could see," which was true. I mean, there was a compost bins behind the building, but there's no odor, no flies, no seepage, no leachate, no anything like that. They're just compost bins like you saw there. And he says it's obvious that the complaint was unfounded, and he's going to write it down as an unfounded complaint, and he left. So that's, you know, that's the kind of thing. Now, you could have a humidor compost system in your backyard, your place of business, and not be responsible, not cover it up, you know, not pay attention to what you're doing. It could be odorous, you know, it could draw flies, and then you're asking for trouble. You deserve to be get in trouble for that, because it's so simple just to cover it up and do it correctly. Now, this guy's had his hand up for about an hour there. Can everybody hear what he's... No, he says, you saw the compost bins that the Koreans were looking at that had straw on it and around it. First off, let me say humidorhandbook.com has a bunch of video clips of how to add compost to a compost pile, how to start a compost pile from scratch, how to build a compost bin, how to build one of these toilets, how we build them, a video clip of that. There's all sorts of free information there that you can go to and look at. Humidorhandbook.com. Just click on Humidor in Google and you'll find it. There are nuances to making compost. One of them is you never put organic material on a compost pile. You never put organic material on a compost pile. any organic material that may be smelly or attract dogs or vermin, you always put organic material in a compost pile. In a compost pile. So your compost pile is always covered. You move that cover material away. There's your compost. You dig a depression, and you dump it in there. Then you put the compost back over it, then the cover material, and then maybe some fresh cover material. So in the case of... And you throw some wire on it to keep... In case you might have a stray dog or something. 30 years I've been doing this. I think we had a stray dog one time that came in. I saw it standing on top of the compost pile. And I have some chickens. If they get out, they'll get on the compost. So I just keep a piece of wire fence and just throw it on top. You saw it showed it on it. Yeah. And it's so simple, easy. Nothing will disturb it if you have that on there. But so what you're doing is, with the humidor, is it's always going in like this. You know, it's going in the center. And what happens is you end up with a cushion, a straw or leaves or hay or weeds, whatever your cover material is, that cushion builds around the outside. And it does provide insulation. And it does help maintain that heat, especially through cold weather.
What about rain?
Rain is good for compost. Compost loves moisture. Imagine a compost pile should be like a sponge full of moisture that you so you could wring it out. That's how wet compost should be. So if one of the problems that people have with their compost is it's too dry. And one of the reasons people's compost is dry is because they're separating out urine. That urine has to be in there. That's a critical ingredient. You're always seeing urine separation. That's a mistake. Forget about that. That's something else. People who are doing urine separation are not doing thermophilic compost, I guarantee you. Way in the back with the hat on. Well, that's what we're actually working on right now. And what I'm proposing is that people who want to use a humidor toilet at any scale, from a single family scale to thousands of people at an event, for example, that the material that's collected is collected exactly the same way. You cover it with a carbon-based material, et cetera. Once the receptacles are full, they're collected. They're collected by an enterprise that takes them and composts them. That's pretty idiot-proof. And you can make these 5-gallon receptacles, or you can fit them with watertight screw lids, which is just something that all this could be supplied by the company that's providing the sanitation service. So all that the sanitation service needs are users to use the toilet. And when the receptacles are full, they would come and collect them. Now that, and then we're looking at compost bins that are enclosed, not in touch with the ground or anything like that. We're working on a proprietary design so that we can create this thermophilic compost inside a vessel that the health department and everybody who's concerned about everything can live with. And that's what we're working with right now in Marin County to develop. So that's the idiot-proof system. Now, having said that, I've also seen this system, this humidor system, used by people who were completely irresponsible. To give you an example, a fellow, he had a 5-gallon bucket, and that's what he used. That's it. No toilet seat, no nothing. He just took a magazine and put it over the edge so he could sit down on it without it, you know, giving him a new butt crack, you know. And his girlfriend lived with him, and she hated it. But I think he was testing her to, you know, if she could endure that, he would marry her, and he did. They're married still today. They've been married for 10 years. But he would just take the thing out and dump it in a pile. And I know two or three people who've done this. They've just taken them out and dumped them in a pile and not build a bin, not cover it. And then, you know, I go back 3 or 4 years later to find the pile that they made. And there it is, all covered with vegetation. It's just a pile of vegetation. So, you know, it seems like even an idiot, you know, can do it because you know, people say, well, how much sawdust do you use or how much cover material? If it smells, you don't have enough. You just put enough on there so you don't smell it. So like I say, you can have a container of humidor anywhere with that cover material. You are not going to smell it. It's a phenomenon of sawdust. And according to other people, a lot of other different cover materials work the same way. Rotted leaves. So your instinct tells you to cover it. That already has created a balance between the nitrogen and the carbon. So if you simply pile it up, it will degrade, and that degradation will produce material that will the plants like, even if you're an idiot. This fellow right there in the brown. Yeah, those were in France, and I also showed ones in Australia. The fellow in Australia is a little bit ahead of everybody else. He's doing events. A year ago, he said he serviced already 1.5 million people with these toilets. He has the logistics down. He has it down to where he can bring in, 50 of these or 100 of these, put them up. You step up three steps, so you're up this high, and you go in, and then there's a seat up there, so you have this, have enough space underneath there for a 55-gallon drum. The guy in France, his are at ground level. You go in, you still have a seat, so there's still room under there for half a drum. That's what he used on a pallet. So we're looking at 55-gallon drum size, drum handling equipment. We're looking at using compostable plastic liners inside these so that when they're emptied, the receptacles are clean. There's a lot of little nuances that we're trying to iron out. And in order to do it, we need to be able to collect human ore on a larger scale. That's why we're trying to get the government to get behind this, to let us do the research and development we need to get this system perfected. We've already can do it on a single. I mean, for me, my own personal experiences with up to on a daily basis about 6 people, and for an event maybe 150. But in order to make large compost piles, you need a lot more than that. You need hundreds of people, and we can't collect from hundreds of people without the government getting on board and supporting us and letting us, giving us the permits and letting people have and use these toilets so we can collect the material and compost it. That's what we're working on. Wait a second. This man in the gray back there. Okay, now. Okay, first off, human excrement has always gotten a bad rap, ever since the cholera epidemics of the late 1800s. The cholera epidemics occurred because people were crapping in holes in the ground, and if a sick person with cholera happened to be one of those people, the pathogens that create cholera were seeping into the drinking wells. Here's the latrine, here's the drinking well. And eventually they figured out the connection, but they didn't know why. It's interesting when you go back and read about this stuff. They thought ethers were going through the soil. They didn't know about microorganisms. They didn't know about microbiology. So over the years, and I write about some of this in my book, human excrement, the U.S. government says never, never use human excrement for agricultural purposes. And we, through the last several generations, we've been given this idea that human excrement is very, 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 very dangerous. But it's coming out of your body. So how can you get sick from what's coming out of your body? Think about it. Unless you're already sick, of course. See, the danger isn't you creating an illness for yourself. The danger is somebody who's ill contaminating somebody else's environment. So if you have your own personal humanoid toilet, all you have to do with the receptacle is rinse it out, dump the water in the compost bin. In my case, I use a brush and a little bit of soap, I use a 4-receptacle system, so I wait until 4 receptacles are filled, and then they all go to the compost bin at once. That's once a week. It's about a 20-minute job, and I use rainwater, rinse them out, put the water in the compost bin, and that's it. I've done that for 30 years. It's not a problem. in the case of larger scale, where you're collecting from a lot of different places or larger receptacles, I'm suggesting putting a compostable plastic, so-called plastic liner, and then just dumping. Because I experimented with those last couple of years. I used a compostable plastic liners in my receptacles just to experiment with them. And when you empty those receptacles, they're clean. They're clean already. Well, newsprint, there's nothing wrong with newsprint. It's just that if you empty the receptacle, you'll still have to clean it. Because yeah, but there's still liquid. The still liquid penetrates the paper, and just, it'll still be wet on the inside. Whereas a plastic liner, when you dump the material out, it's dry. It's dry inside and clean inside, actually. Well, it in my backyard system, I used it at my home in my place of business. The plastic disappeared about 95%. It's compostable plastic. Yeah, it's like a cornstarch type material. They may. I have some here, in fact, that I brought it to show people. Oh yeah, here's some here. You could pass it around. There's. Well, what I had left after about 6 months, you could stuff into a pint jar. You could stuff it into a pint jar. That's how much that was left over in my compost pile. I could take that, stuff it into a pint jar. I just threw it back into compost. Now, my backyard compost generally maintains a temperature of 120 to 130 degrees. In a larger system, you're going to have higher temperatures. And with higher temperatures, that material is going to disappear. So we're talking about collecting more to make bigger piles, which will produce higher temperatures for a longer period of time, in which case these liners are going to disappear altogether. You, ma'am, in the back there? Yeah. Well, what you do is start your compost piles with what I call a biological sponge. You dump in a whole bunch of organic material. So you have this cushion on the bottom of your pile. And then you start your new material on top of that cushion. And then you build from that. That creates a barrier, so to speak, between the compost and the soil. And to tie that into a question asked earlier, if I take 4 5-gallon receptacles out and start a new pile, It will start generating heat just from that amount of volume in those conditions after a few days. Now, having said that, my compost has evolved over the last 30 years. It's evolved much more than, say, the Republican Party, for example. Yeah, which isn't saying much. My compost used to freeze solid every winter. Solid is a shitsicle. I have a giant shitsicle in my backyard. After about 10 or 12 years, maybe a little longer, it stopped freezing. And I didn't know why. I thought, it's like the canary in the coal mine with global warming or something. You know, something's changing here. Last year, I had temperatures in my compost 120 degrees above ambient temperatures. So it was zero outside. It was 120 in the compost pile. And this change has been occurring over 30 years now. And I'm speculating that, you know, there's an awful lot of generations that occur in bacteria in a year's time. I mean, probably millions. So I'm thinking they're evolving to be more acclimated to my place on the planet, you know, my spot on the planet. and so they're more successful every year in thriving and surviving. And this is one of the little nuances of this whole process that is not understood. But I'm observing it. So you there with the hand up. Yeah, he's talking about cat and dog and pet manures. Again, if you have the time and have internet access, humanorhandbook.com, if you go there, there's a message board, public message board that's been up there for years. People from all over the world get on that message board, and if you search cat manure, dog manure, pet manure, you'll find all kinds of threads about people talking about that and every other issue of human or composting. And rather than me trying to reiterate everything, let me just say that that's a really good resource for information like that. Yes, you can compost cat manure and dog manure. I don't because I don't have it, the compost. But if you look at pathogen suppression and whatnot, the pathogens that exist, and they do, in those animal manures are killed rapidly in thermophilic conditions. So if I had a bunch of dog manure or cat manure and I wanted to get rid of it, that's where it would go, into the compost. Not onto, but into the compost. You way in the back. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. He asked about wood ash, using wood ash, and using lime is another thing. You hear often put lime in your toilet, put wood ashes in your toilet. What you are trying to do is encourage microbial growth. You're trying to encourage bacteria. You're trying to encourage the microorganisms. And lime and wood ashes discourage microbial growth. In fact, lime is used to kill bacteria in sewage sludge. Sewage sludge is lime stabilized. If you bring the pH up to 9.4 or something like that, bacterial growth stops. It's called lime stabilization. It's not what you want to do in a human system. You're trying to encourage the microorganisms. So you do not put lime, do not put wood ashes in the compost system. Wood ash is basically just mineral. And the best thing to do with wood ashes, put them directly into your soil. Take your wood ashes out any time of the year and just put them on top of the ground where you want to use them. And they will leach right into the ground. Microorganisms don't eat wood ashes, so don't give them to them. You, sir.
Can the compost get too hot so that it kills the...
Compost can get too hot. It's not likely to occur in a backyard system or a well-managed system. But and I write about that. I explain that issue in my book as well. Some compost operators, composting science is a pretty well-established science, but from a practical standpoint, it's still developing technology in the United States. And some compost operators, when they found out that the heat destroyed the pathogens, they thought the more heat, the better. Well, the more heat, the better. The more heat isn't better, because if you raise the temperature up to 170 degrees, say, for example, Fahrenheit, what happens is those organisms that are producing that heat will kill everything else. Nothing else will survive. So you end up, you'll lose the microbiodiversity. And the biodiversity is essential to a healthy compost. So what they found, and the way they were doing, they were forcing air and forcing, encouraging the growth of a single species of bacteria that was producing the very high temperatures. Those, they ended up with a compost that was almost effectively sterile. Sterile, without life. The only life was that one strain of bacteria. So that, when you have a sterile environment, it can be repopulated by pathogenic organisms, and that's what was happening. So the object isn't to achieve a high temperature. The object is to achieve microbiodiversity that includes a thermophilic period of, you know, reasonable temperatures. This is Bob Bag. This might make a good Halloween costume, actually. You know, where's my brother when I need him? He could be trying this on for us. Mr. Sanitation right here.
Okay to say a few words?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll give you your $20 later. Just
okay.
Yeah, that's good that you brought that up. As far as the wood ashes, let's start with that. When I was in Finland in August at the World Dry Toilet Conference, there were people from 50 different countries and a lot of research scientists presenting their research. And some of the research they were doing was taking material from toilets in which people were putting wood ashes. And they were testing for the Ascaris, which is the roundworm. This is, happened to be in the Philippines, I believe. And they found that the wood ashes and the retention time had no effect on the viability of the roundworms. After 2, 3, 4 months, they kept checking the viability. The roundworm eggs were still viable. So, you see, this is why we're trying to collect this stuff and thermophilically compost it. The roundworm eggs will die in an hour. But with the wood ash system or the lime system, it does not kill that particular pathogen. Now, as far as the the sawdust, the bacteria, the thermophilic bacteria, if the wood particles are too big, it slows the compost down. Wood is a tough material to break down. It's full of lignin. Lignin is a very bacterially resistant material. Tree bark, you notice on trees, you don't see the tree bark rotting. You don't see bacterial infections. It's bacterially resistant because of the lignins. Fungi will consume lignins, but bacteria won't. If you grind the wood up into small enough particles, then the bacteria can proliferate. So you should never use wood chips in your compost. Wood chips, we have examples of everything here. These are wood chips here, and you see how big the particles of wood are. People are always saying use wood chips. Use wood chips in your compost. Don't use wood chips. Don't use lime. Don't use wood ashes. Don't use wood chips. Don't separate your urine. These are common misconceptions about compost. You don't want to use wood chips. Even in commercial, large-scale commercial operations where they do use wood chips, after the compost is finished, they have to screen them out, and then they use them again because they will not compost. You want small particles. Now, here's some sawdust. This is sawdust from a tree. Trees, this is, he said it was cypress. I don't know where you get cypress around here. Is it? Is it a common tree?
It's a windbreak.
Smells very nice. Perfect consistency for a indoor or in-house in the toilet composting system. This idiot-proof system we're trying to set up where a composting enterprise collects the humidor and composts it, they then would also provide the cover material. And it may not be just sawdust. It may be a mix of a variety of materials that are ground up and mixed to make a proprietary material so that all the person who uses the toilet has to do is use the toilet. Other materials, wood shavings. Wood shavings are thicker. You can actually see the wood particles. They will compost, but they slow the process down. They take longer to break down. And what happens when you're slowing the compost process down, you're not getting the high temperatures. Now, if you use these in a large a large compost mass, you'll still achieve temperatures, but in a smaller mass, like in a backyard bin, wood shavings aren't recommended. The other problem with wood shavings is they're kind of airy. You know, they're bigger particles. Air will pass through them. And if you're using them in a toilet to cover the contents, you have to use more. Because sawdust, it doesn't take much. You know, it's a small particle, it covers everything, no odor escapes. But if you're using an airy material that air can get through, odor can come through it, so you have to use more. So what happens is you're putting too much carbon in, it's throwing the carbon-nitrogen balance off. You have too much carbon, and it's also filling the receptacles faster, so you're emptying them more, or they're being emptied more. And because you have a higher carbon ratio on your floor, because you have a higher carbon ratio in your compost, it slows the process down. Ideal ratio is 30 to 1, and if you raise the carbon, it'll reduce the temperature. So there's all these nuances, but there are a lot of materials. Here's coco coir, which looks like it'd be a perfect material for in a toilet. Coco coir, it's from the local store here, from coconut husks that are ground up. People who write in on our message boards from other countries say they use rice hulls. Some people write in about leaves. They rake up leaves, let them rot, and then they use those leaf mold, we call it. They say it works perfectly in their toilet. So there are lots of different possibilities. Straw is perfect for a bin. It's not really too good in a toilet unless you like getting straw up your ass, you know, which is what will happen. But in a compost bin, it's ideal, you know. Well, yeah, no, it's better than wood shavings. Straw breaks down rapidly, and it's perfect for making compost. Wood shavings are a little slower to break down. And this is the kind of stuff you learn from practice. And ideally, we don't reinvent the wheel. You know, you don't just start from scratch and try to figure it all out yourself. People have already done this. We already have a lot of the information and answers. So you start with a foundation of knowledge that's already been established and build from that. And that's what I'm trying to do in providing this information so people don't have to reinvent the wheel. You, ma'am? Well, you know, anytime somebody says something is illegal, you want to see exactly what statute exists that creates that illegality. You know, for example, I looked up in the wastewater code, California wastewater code, the definition of waste, because waste has to be disposed of, and the waste did not mention any compost or anything like that. Waste is defined was what is taken from septic systems and septage and the stuff that's pumped out of portable toilets, for example, but it doesn't say anything about human or toilet or, you know, there's no waste there. There's no water being used. You see, this whole human or idea is new stuff. And when the laws and statutes were established, nobody was thinking that human excrement was a resource, a recyclable resource. So it's sort of in an area, a gray area, let's say, a legal gray area.
It'll be McPoop.
.com, yeah.
Or .org, actually.
Yeah, or .org. There are lots of these legality issues that I mentioned some of them in my book. A guy up in New England, they would not let him. He had a human or toilet, and they said, you can't do that. You got to have an approved toilet. And he fought them, and he fought them. He fought City Hall, and the only thing they let him have was an incinerating toilet. He had to buy a $1,000 incinerating toilet. He bought it, took it home in the box, stuck it in the back room, and never took it out of the box, and they never bothered him again. As long as he owned it, that's all they cared about. And he just used the humidor toilet. He still, to this day, does. Another couple from down in Kentucky, I think it was, they bought a house that had no sewage system. They set up a humidor system. They couldn't have a sewage system. It was built on bedrock with a creek behind it. There was no place for a septic system or for a leach field. They set up the humidor system. It worked like a charm. But the neighbor thought that they were doing what the previous residents did, discharging sewage directly into the stream. So when the neighbor saw these new people move in, he called the DEP or the EPA, whoever it was, and reported them as having no sewage because the previous residents had discharged their sewage directly into the stream. The DEP came out, looked at it, saw what they were doing, which was no direct discharge. It was a humidor system, and left them alone. So, you know, it's sometimes, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of a risk involved when you're doing something that's new and different. But if it's the right thing and you're conscientious about it, you know, chances are the right results are going to occur. Way in the back there? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. What else are you going to do with the drugs, medication, pharmaceuticals? Put them in water and discharge them in the environment. You know, you want to capture them, subject them to this thermophilic process. Last year, I don't usually take drugs of any kind, pharmaceuticals, but what are you laughing at? You said you don't know me. But I had to take a strong antibiotic for some reason. I can't remember what it was. And of course, I just continued to compost everything. And I always keep a thermometer in and monitor the temperature. And if an antibiotic was affecting the biological mass, it would show as a change in the temperature and had no effect at all. So that was happened to be for me. Way in the back to that blonde guy. Oh, girl. No, there's nothing anaerobic. It's all aerobic. But that's a really good question because it's an aerobic system, but you don't have to dig it, turn it, chop it. You don't have to do anything to it. And people think, when I tell them use bulky materials in the compost bin to trap air, people think you really got to use bulky material and you have to have visible air spaces. You don't. You don't. As long as it's not underwater, as long as there's no standing liquid, you have air spaces in there enough for thermophilic compost. You might think there's no air, that it's just a like a sponge. But there is. As long as it's not in a standing liquid, there's enough air for thermophilic compost. You don't have to have big bulky stuff in there and a big, bunch of air spaces in it. Interstitial air spaces, even microscopic ones, are adequate for a thermophilic. No, you don't turn it. And like I said, when you're adding humidor food, or I compost dead animals too. Animal mortalities is the term, like if a chicken dies or if a possum gets into the chicken house, I'll feed it a little snack of lead. Here's a compost thermometer. Where's my brother? let's see what your temperature is there, bro. Ducks, raccoons, possums, any small animals, they all go into my compost. But it's the same system. You push the cover material, you dig a hole, and this is the hot center. You put it in the hot center. So you're feeding, you're not throwing it around the edges. You're feeding it into the center. You're constantly feeding it into the center. This is a little management technique, important management technique that it helps if somebody tells you to do, because you might not think to do it that way. That way, any fresh material is being subjected immediately to the most robust part of the compost. Now, there are in there has been a fair amount of research done on large-scale batch compost where the compost is turned frequently and infrequently and not at all. And I have some of this research in my book. The compost that's not turned is the most economical and has the highest nutrient level. Because when you're turning compost, all the stuff goes up in the air. You know, all the steam and nitrogen, and then you get odors and spores and everything. And when you don't turn it, nothing comes out of it. And what they found, besides the fact that it's the cheapest that way and has the most agricultural value, but they also found that there was no effect on pathogen suppression. Turning it didn't. This is what everybody says, you got to turn all the outside edges in the center. But what they found was it didn't seem to have any effect. If you did not turn it, it still didn't have the pathogens in it. So, you ma'am? Right. The heating elements in those tend to be for dehydration, to get rid of the liquid, to reduce the mass. Yeah. So, a lot of people write into our message board and say the same thing, that they have this brand or that brand and it stinks and, you know, it overflows and gets waterlogged. There's a photo on the site of one of those commercial units where they took out the guts and just stuck a 5-gallon receptacle in it, and it works like a charm now. You know? Okay, we've got lots of still questions here, Mr. in the purple.
How do you deal with your business where you have
a... No, we don't. We've never had a septic system. Now, in Pennsylvania, if you don't have running water in pipes, you don't have to have a drain, because it would be nothing to drain. And if you have nothing to drain, then you don't need a septic. So what I did was I put an outdoor hydrant. So there is water, but it's outside in a hydrant. So I can get water for the plants, and then we just put water in a receptacle at the sink, and it goes into a bucket, the drain, and we just take the bucket out and dump it in the flower beds. So that keeps us legal. Now, otherwise, we're required to create water pollution. And this is the irony of it. The law actually requires us to create polluted water. We are right now in the process of putting in a septic system, which has been a great learning experience for me. They're very expensive, and you cannot use them without polluting water, without creating water pollution. And that polluted water goes out into the ground and soaks into the ground. Now, my neighbors have a spring, and the only place the sewage enforcement officer would permit that leach field was right above their spring. So it's crazy, you know, that we have a system that produces no sewage whatsoever and no water pollution, but by law, we're required to put in a water polluting septic system that can threaten my neighbor's spring. Okay, more questions here. We got a few more. You sir? Pardon? Yeah, it may be possible to create a drum type system, but then that's one of the things I'm working on right now, in fact. But you can't just use a drum. It won't work. You'll have standing liquid in the bottom, and it won't be aerobic. Now, you could fill a drum, and you'll just leak out. Then you have contamination. But then a drum could be collected, you know, potentially by a service. So you could fill them up, and somebody would take them and compost them. That's in a container? Roughly, to be safe, a cubic meter. Roughly, you could do it with a cubic meter, but there are some.
Just not counting the insulation.
Yeah, you could. That would include the. I produce about a cubic meter a year. Cubic meter's actually quite a bit. You know, it's almost 40 inches on a side and a finished compost. But
I used to do that too.
Yeah. Anybody else have questions? This man right here with the hat on.
Can you use your humanure compost pile as your all-purpose compost pile?
Yes, and you should. You should, absolutely. No, absolutely not. Everything goes into the same compost. All the humanure is one of the feedstocks. It's a critical one. Most compost lacks two things, nitrogen and moisture. That comes from the humanure. If you include all your food, your garden materials, your yard materials, anything else you can gather up, you'll have really good compost. Anybody else here? We all done? The latest lady in the back? The little sign?
Yeah, you have
a
little sign that you have
inside there. Oh, it says you're using a compost toilet system. Make sure you cover your deposits with some sawdust or whatever's in there. If it's full, alert the attendant. Or if it's a small container, take it out, put a lid on it, put an empty one in, and stuff like that. Make sure all the paper goes in there, And there's no waste being produced here. There's no pollution being produced here. Everything going into the system will be recycled, et cetera, that kind of stuff. Don't put cigarette butts in. Don't put anything in like trash, Just general directions and instructions. You, sir?
I'm curious about the human history. It surprises me that no one else is, that this is a relatively new practice. I'm wondering if there's any, champions of, poo technology in our history, in our human history. People around the world responsibly managing their.
Well, it's actually pretty fascinating, and that's a whole another subject. Back in 1860, a guy named Henry Moule in the UK, in England, developed and invented the earth closet, which is basically the same thing, except that was pre-microbiology. And he had no idea about compost science or microbiology. It didn't exist. So his idea was to use a toilet and cover it with earth, with dry earth. And then that, when that was full, I suppose it was dumped someplace, that would dry out. They would sift that and they'd use it again. You could use it five or six times. In the meantime, there's absolutely no pathogen suppression or destruction going on. They didn't know about disease organisms. And so it lost favor and went out of favor probably in the early 1900s. But it was kind of a big thing for a while. There were several books on it. And you can still find these earth closets in somebody's attic somewhere made out of wood. And they were designed that when you got up or sat down or lifted the seat up, the earth automatically injected into the toilet, which we could do with the salt. All they had to do was shift from earth to a carbon material, and it would have worked, if they knew or understood composting. But they didn't, and so the whole thing just disappeared. And now, since then, we've learned a lot about microbiology, about disease, about the need for composting, and so we're back on track again. Who else had a question here? Okay, are we done here? Because I'm hearing it's beer 30. Somebody told me it's beer 30 right about now. Oh.